fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When someone shares a secret, it rarely stays quiet. Just like a game of telephone, each person adds their own little extra detail, and the story grows bigger and more exciting with each new version. That is pretty much how rumors work, and it's exactly what happened in this case, too. Back in 1872, a whispered hint about diamonds hidden somewhere in the American wilderness started small. But as the story bounced from person to person, it turned into a huge story about hidden treasures just waiting to be found. Welcome back, friend, to Hometown History. Today's episode is all about one of America's most elaborate scams, one that drew in even the wealthy and powerful, all chasing a dream that was too good to be true. In the words of Charles Dexter Cleveland, one of the most barefaced, reckless, courageous, bold, ingenious, premeditated, carefully planned, deliberate, time-serving, colossal frauds ever known in the history of man. This is the Great Diamond Hoax of 1872. Let's go back to the year 1870. The story began with two prospectors, Philip Arnold and John Slack. Prospectors are basically people who search for valuable minerals or metals like gold, silver, or diamonds. So they explore areas where these materials might be found. And usually, these are areas that are relatively unexplored. Coming back to Philip and John, who were also cousins, by the way, these men made their way to the office of George Roberts, a businessman in San Francisco. Now, Roberts was known for his quick moves when opportunities knocked on the door. And when the cousins knocked on his door, they brought him that opportunity. Now, Roberts had a bit of a history with Philip. He was a strong, independent, and persuasive man from Kentucky, and was about 41 years old at that time. Philip had served in the Mexican-American War, and then joined the mid-19th century gold rush in California. Later, he worked on gold and silver mining operations, where Roberts had investments. They were carrying a leather bag, insisting it contained something valuable they couldn't deposit at the Bank of California because it was after hours. They needed a safe place for their precious items. At first, Philip and John were secretive about the contents, but curiosity got the better of Roberts. So they finally revealed the contents of the bag. Rough diamonds, and there were lots of them. They claim these diamonds came from a hidden gem field somewhere in the vast western United States, but they refused to disclose the exact location. Obviously, Roberts was intrigued, and seeing the potential for immense wealth, he promised to keep their secret. Of course, he quickly broke that promise and shared the news with two other influential men, William Ralston, founder of the Bank of California, and Asbury Harpending. Ralston was one of the wealthiest men in California at the time, having made his fortune investing in the silver bonanza of Nevada's Comstock Lode. But Harpending, on the other hand, had a more checkered history. He had been involved in various ambitious ventures, some successful, some not. By 1870, both Ralston and Harpending were already involved in a new project called the Mountains of Silver in New Mexico. Harpending was in England seeking investors when he heard about the gem field. As you would expect, he was excited to try his luck. So he hurried back to San Francisco in May 1871, eager to get in on the action. In the meantime, Philip and John had returned to Roberts with more diamonds and rubies, claiming they had recovered 60 pounds of gems, worth over $500,000. That is roughly equivalent to more than $12 million today. So the excitement was obvious, and Roberts brought two more prominent figures into the mix. General George Dodge, a former Union Army officer, and William Lent, another investor in the Comstock Lode. With each new player, the story gained more momentum. All five people involved till that point, also called the San Francisco backers, had big dreams. But to their disappointment, Philip and John still refused to disclose the gem field's location. The reality, on the other hand, was that Philip had worked for a company that used diamond-tipped drill bits. He probably took some of the industrial-grade diamonds from there. The rest of the gems were purchased in London, as we discussed, or from Native Americans in Arizona. So using these diamonds, they tricked these businessmen in believing that a secret diamond field did exist. And here is where the actual scam began. They agreed to bring back even more stones in exchange for a $50,000 investment from them. That would be about $1 million today. With that money in hand, instead of heading to a hidden gem field, the cousins went to London. Using fake names, they purchased rough, uncut diamonds and rubies that were worth half of what they took from the investors. Then they returned to San Francisco and presented these stones to their eager investors, claiming they were from the mysterious gem field. And obviously, the investors were amazed at the sight of these gems. The stones were, in fact, real, but they noticed that the quality was low. So to add credibility, they decided to have 10% of the stones appraised by Charles Lewis Tiffany of Tiffany & Company in New York. Present at this appraisal were several high-profile figures, including Major General George McClellan, Congressman Benjamin Butler, and Horace Greeley, the editor of the New York Tribune. Now the thing was that neither Lewis Tiffany nor his gem expert had experience with uncut stones, so they accidentally valued the gems much higher than they were actually worth. So luckily for Philip and John, Tiffany declared the gems genuine, valuing them at about $150,000, nowhere close to the actual value. With credibility established back in San Francisco, the investors formed the San Francisco and New York Mining and Commercial Company. They displayed trays of gems to attract people to invest in their business. And by showing the gems, they hoped to convince potential investors to buy shares in their company.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make high-quality clothing for a summer wardrobe you'll love, all made right here in the USA. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
But another problem cropped up. The investors were excited, but they weren't all fools. They insisted on seeing the actual gem field. Philip and John agreed to it, on the condition that an expert would come along and the investors would be blindfolded to keep the location a secret. The chosen expert was Henry Janin, who was a respected mining engineer. So in June of 1872, the inspection party, including Philip, John, Janin, Dodge, Harpending, and Harpending's friend, Alfred Rubery, set off. They traveled by train to Rawlins in Wyoming Territory, and after arriving there, they switched to riding horses to continue their journey. After 4 days of a confusing route, they arrived at the site, a wide, flat area with a tall, cone-shaped mountain nearby. Surprisingly, within minutes, one of the party members found a diamond. And soon enough, they were all discovering a large quantity of gems. Janin, who was now completely convinced of the authenticity of this site, reported the gem field as genuine, and the news spread like wildfire, even attracting the interest of the prestigious London banking firm, Rothschild. Now we know that Philip and John were conning the investors. So the question is, how did Janin and the inspection team find so many diamonds in that field? And the answer is, they didn't. Well, they did. But those diamonds didn't belong to that mine. They planted those gems well in advance and left them for the visitors to find. The term for this is salting. Basically, they scattered low-quality diamonds and other gems that they had bought from various places to make it look like there was a natural deposit of precious stones. So when they led the investors to that site, the investors found the planted gems and believed what they wanted to be the truth all along. The field was real. So after the success of this inspection of around 3,000 acres of land at that site, the investors paid Janin $2,500 and offered him 1,000 shares of company stock. Upon returning to New York, Janin sold his shares for a $30,000 profit, which is roughly around $7.5 million today. Meanwhile, Philip and John realized that their con was now too public, and it was time to cash out. All in all, John took $100,000, while Philip ended up with $550,000, minus expenses. So together they had conned their investors out of $650,000, which is well over $13 million today. After that, John disappeared, and Philip returned to Kentucky with his family. They were officially out of the game, but the investors weren't. The hoax might have gone undetected if not for a combination of luck and skillful detective work. Clarence King, a geologist leading a government survey, heard about the gem field. One of King's men, Samuel Emmons, met Janin on a train and saw some of the diamonds. But his knowledge led him to doubt the authenticity of the gem field. So he reported his suspicions to Clarence King, who then decided to investigate further. King and his team traveled to the Wyoming-Colorado border, where they found the site just as Janin described. They discovered gems, but thanks to their expertise, they also found evidence of tampering, tiny holes in the ground where gems had been planted. The jig was up. And with that, the once enthusiastic investors realized they had been duped. Again, the news broke, and pretty soon newspapers were publishing the headlines on their front pages. Both Philip and John were found and indicted for fraud, but never brought to trial. Philip settled out of court with the investors and later became a banker in Kentucky. Unfortunately for him, his past eventually caught up to him. He was shot by a business rival in 1878 and died 6 months later from pneumonia. John dropped out of public view. He moved to St. Louis and opened a casket-making business. Later, he became a casket maker in White Oaks, New Mexico, where he lived quietly until he died in 1896 at 76 years old. And that is all for today's episode. The Great Diamond Hoax of 1872 is actually a reminder for us that all that glitters is not gold, or diamonds in this case. So the next time you hear about a quick and easy way to get rich that sounds too good to be true, think about it twice. Thanks for listening to Hometown History. Be sure to follow along for more interesting stories from the past.